Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with talk of chicken heads, hexes, and behind-the-scenes maneuvering, the city council speaker's race has been far from boring in New York City these last few days and weeks, and all the months of campaigning will culminate in a vote expected today. But what is actually at stake in this election? We thought we would give you some background with Sally Goldenberg, senior reporter for Capital New York, with the basics, including what the city council speaker actually does and how today's vote will likely shake out. Hi, Sally. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And it's 10:38 in the morning. They haven't done this yet, right?
No, it's this meeting scheduled for noon.
There was once a joke from former Parks Commissioner Henry Stern. What's the difference between city council and a rubber stamp? Do you know this one?
A rubber stamp leaves an impression.
That was it. But that was before a Supreme Court ruling back in the 1980s threw out the old system of government in New York City. People don't know this. I know you know it. New York City's system of government, as recently in the 1980s, was declared unconstitutional because the borough presidents had too much power. Now they don't have any power. The borough presidents had too much power. They appointed most of the Board of Estimate, which did most of the governing along with the mayor. And since the boroughs don't have the same number of people per borough, that was considered a violation of the one person, one vote principle of the U.S. Constitution. Holy cow. Ancient history at this point in New York, but really only 30 years old. So city council was empowered in a new charter that was voted on in 1989, and the speaker of the city council was created as a newly powerful position. So with that civics background as a starting point, what does the speaker of the city council do?
I mean, the main role is to push the legislative agenda. So, you know, the speaker determines what bills come to the floor and really shapes what bills are going to get passed and what vetoes will be overridden.
And the speaker has a lot of power.
And also, I'm sorry, one other important thing. Oh, the speaker, the council has two other really important kind of powerful positions. One is the budget. You know, the mayor presents a budget but can't pass it without the council. And the budget has to be on time and balanced every year by law or else the Financial Control Board takes over. So the council has the power to negotiate the budget with the mayor, to restore his cuts, to demand he not cut certain programs, cut others, you know, et cetera. Excuse me. And then as he modifies the budget throughout the year, any additional spending has to be approved by the city council. And the other thing the council has a lot of say over is land use. I mean, you see all the time that, you know, land use projects go through a long process and it ends at the city council. So you often see the council blocking projects like they just did with Midtown East. They blocked the original Kingsbridge Armory project because they didn't agree with certain aspects of it, like, you know, paying a living, that they weren't paying a living wage, et cetera. So those are the main, that's really where the main power lies with the speaker.
Which is a lot when you stop and think
power.
About it, right? When the budget is huge because it determines how the city spends its money, which really determines what its priorities are. And land use, which is, you know, so vital in New York, so many real estate interests, all the housing issues.
Absolutely.
Mayor Bloomberg's
in comparison to the power of the mayor, of course. The city has, you know, the city charter has such that the mayor is a very powerful position. But, no, the speaker is not a rubber it does not have to be a rubber stamp by any means.
Where would you say that Mayor de Blasio in particular will most need city council to enact his inequality fighting agenda? Because one of the issues here is that Mayor de Blasio has gotten more involved in throwing his political weight behind one of the speaker candidates, Melissa Mark Viverito, than any mayor since this modern system was created.
Absolutely. And so your question was, what will he need the council to do?
I mean, his,
the main, you know, prong of his inequality agenda hinges on Albany, right? That's the income tax hike for universal pre-K.
Right.
So most, other than the property tax, all tax changes are determined in Albany. But what he needs the council for is to, you know, he wants to expand the paid sick days law. He needs them to do that. They probably will. he's going to have a tough time with the budget because he's the guy who's been talking about homelessness, education, inequality, social services, and now he's going to be presented with a budget where he may have to cut some of these services, and he's going to need the council to not create, you know, rhetoric the way they did with Bloomberg. It was always, he doesn't understand, what we were going through because he's a rich guy and he's out of touch, et cetera. That was always sort of the mantra of the council when they were protesting his budget cuts. That would be damaging for de Blasio, to say the least.
And the same thing with Mayor Giuliani and not so much with Mayor Dinkins, but the council was more populist than the mayor for the last 20 years. Here is this populist mayor, and I guess he has to try to fend off the council running on things or legislating on things, even to his left.
That's right. I mean, to some extent, if he has higher ambitions beyond mayor, it's okay to look like you're governing somewhat from the center. I mean, you never govern from the left, from as far left as you run in a primary. But I don't think it would be helpful for him to have them say, you know, he doesn't understand the needs of public housing residents. I mean, that goes against his whole shtick, right?
Right.
So, like, that would not be good for him.
And yet, he's getting behind the council speaker candidate, Melissa Mark Viverito, who is seen as more populist, more progressive than her opponent, Dan Gorodnick. And so he sets himself up for that as kind of a paradox, doesn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, if she, you know, it's subtle differences. If the council is to the left of him and makes him look like, you know, sort of the great compromiser, and he can do the dance and still appear mm-hmm. like a true progressive,
right?
You know, but that's tricky. That's really hard. I think that's what he's going for.
And another big issue for the Progressive Caucus in council, which is supporting Mark Viverito, is that they oppose Christine Quinn on how much she controlled the agenda. And this is a basic question of democracy for any legislature. How much power does the speaker, like the Speaker of the House or the Majority Leader of the Senate, have relative to the committees and relative to the individual members to bring their bills to the floor and things like that? So there's a major democracy agenda here, under which, presumably, Melissa Mark Viverito would take power and then give some of it away, right?
Right. Well, what she has, the rules reform that she's proposing, which is incomplete in its logic, if you game it out, what they're proposing is having someone who is, quote-unquote, independent draft the legislation and determine what comes to the floor. It doesn't make sense because everybody in the council works at the pleasure of the speaker, or just works for the speaker. So,
wait, why is that? I mean, they work at the pleasure of the constituents in their districts, in the 51 city council districts around the city, right?
Yes, but there's a boss. I mean, there's a structure of authority, and the speaker's in charge. So the people who draft legislation work for the speaker.
So he or she gets to determine what committees people are on and who the committee chairs are, things like that?
That's correct. The speaker does, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. But in terms of drafting legislation, this independent person that they envision, ultimately everybody answers to somebody in government, and it's unclear who that person would answer to. So if they say, we're not going to draft this bill or we are going to draft this bill, who are they, you know, who's the final say on that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not clear.
Would that be the committee chair in those cases?
In the rules reform that the Progressive Caucus proposed, it's vague. It's just that it would be an independent entity determining what bills get drafted. That's as specific as it is right now.
Right. All right. So there, folks, is a little overview of what's at stake in the city council speaker election today. And, of course, this is not a citywide election. You can't go to the polls.
That's right.
The 51 members of the council electing their leader, as happens in most legislatures. Did you do your own independent headcount there at Capitol New York? Do you agree with Mark Viverito's contention that she's got the votes?
Yes. I do believe that she will win. The question is whether it's going to be a split vote on the floor or whether in the next, you know, hour and 15 minutes they decide, or if they have decided, and I'm just not sure yet, that they are going to unify behind her, which is usually what happens. You know, the jockeying goes on before the vote, and then the vote is unified.
I mean, because then it could be almost 51-0. There are only three Republicans. I guess that's another thing we should mention.
The Republicans supported Quinn. The only person who didn't support Quinn the second time was Charles Barron in a protest vote.
From her left.
From her second, yeah, when she ran again as Speaker. But no, the Republicans were part of the coalition. They were early supporters in 2006 with the Queens Democrats in Bronx.
Sally Goldenberg, senior reporter for Capital New York, thanks for explaining so much of that for us.
Sure.